in a world that gets more mysterious every day, where government conspiracies and cover-ups are the norm, you need a beacon of truth. You need the Paranormal Patriot.
Welcome one and welcome all to the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me as always. I am your host. My name is Tom Velasquez, wearing the tinfoil hat. This is 2 weeks in a row, everybody. This has not happened since Christmas. Almost 2 months it's been since I've been able to conduct a back-to-back episode of the show. So let's take advantage of this while we can. For those of you who are wondering, those of you who are concerned, thank you for your concern. Yes, I am starting to feel better. I have resigned myself that I will never get rid of these Donald Trump sniffles. This has been going on since Thanksgiving, but if that's the worst thing that happens, I think we'll be all right. Before I begin the show, I do want to say that the response, the listenership of the last couple of shows has been phenomenal. I have mentioned to you in the past that Mysteries of Michigan was skyrocketing in the ratings. And then I changed the name to the Paranormal Patriot. I still think that was the best decision, but it definitely hurt my listenership because a lot of my listeners lost touch and couldn't find me. I think we're starting to get some of those back, as well as a lot of new listeners, because the last couple of shows have been some of the better ranked shows of the year. So thank you. Thank you very much. Now, the last show I had just a general question to a lot of my liberal listeners. I basically wanted them to just explain their rationale to me instead of just sending me hate mail. You can still send me hate mail because I always love getting mail from my listeners, but I want you to, or I wanted them to explain themselves. Try and open my mind. Because I pride myself on being very open-minded. I will listen to everybody's point of view, and I will give it thought. Doesn't mean I'm going to agree with you, but I will at least listen to what you have to say. As expected, not a lot of response from my liberal listeners regarding my plea to give me insight into their thinking, or especially into the immigration issue. However, I did receive responses such as, "Tom, it's the right thing to do." So I responded to that listener by asking them a question. Isn't it the right thing to do to take care of America's own before spending our American money on another country's cast-off? Well, as expected, there was no response to that question because there is no response to it. A logical one, at least. I was also asked what I consider, and if you're listening to the show, the person that sent this, I do apologize, but this is a ludicrous question. This person asked, why are our people, meaning Americans, more important than any other person? And that one really, really took me aback a little bit. It kind of made me pause and think and realize that this is the logic of the left. Everybody is the same. But the problem is everybody is not the same. If you're an American citizen, you have more rights than somebody that's not an American citizen. So I responded via email to that person and simply asked this question. What if that homeless veteran or that jobless person or that hungry child was someone that was close to you? Would you, at that point, feel that they are more important than somebody from another country? I guarantee you that someone in my listening audience knows someone that is struggling mightily, that maybe doesn't have a place to stay, that doesn't always get the meals that they need, or is homeless. Somebody in my listening audience knows someone close to them. How do you explain to them that foreigners are more important than our family members and our friends? The simple answer is, you can't. Now, I personally know one of my listeners who was very closely affected by a terrorist attack in this country. This listener's cousin was in World Trade Center number 2 when it went down. How do you tell this listener, Mr. Liberal, or anyone else for that matter, that it is okay to allow foreigners in from countries that have vowed to destroy us? Can we? And should we take that chance? Again, the simple answer is no, we shouldn't take that chance. I'm not saying, and I've been accused of this, I'm not saying that every Muslim is bad. On the contrary, I know many Muslims from former business associations and current business associations. I know a lot of them that are very, very upstanding, great men and women who I admire tremendously. But there is a select few that don't have those character traits. They want to destroy this country. And I've heard from many liberals, well, Tom, you can take the white person and say the same thing. And you're right to a point. But the white person of this country has not vowed to destroy this country. And that's all we're doing, is we are trying to make sure that our government is doing everything they can to protect us, its citizens, from being the target of a terrorist attack. I don't think that's so bad. As a matter of fact, I think that's the right thing to do. Should we clump every one of the Muslims into one group of terrorists? Absolutely not. Should somebody that's been living here 30 years, went to visit Iran, wants to come back, be denied? Absolutely not. If you've shown that you've had good standing in this country, let them back in. My worry is the ones that are coming here on a student visa or first-time basis that have never been to this country. That is my worry, because we don't know their intentions. If you've been here 20, 30 years and you haven't caused any problems, I think it's safe to say you're good to come in. Now, granted, there's sleeper cells. I understand that, but excuse me. If there's sleeper cells that are waiting 20 to 30 years, there's no way we're going to stop them anyway. It's the people that are coming in from these countries that are on the suspension list. The people that have never been here or are on a student visa, because a student visa, you can come here for anything. Just say you're coming to school, but you really aren't. It's those people that we have to scrutinize more. And I can't understand why it's so hard for the liberals and the left and the millennials and the snowflakes and the inconsolables to understand. All we want to do is make sure they have our best interests in mind. That's it. It's that plain and simple. It's not a racially or religiously divisive executive order. It's an executive order to make sure the citizens of this country are safe. So I was hoping my liberal listeners, instead of sending the hate mail, which I still got some last week, but as I say, I enjoy all mail, I was hoping they could enlighten me, give me something that I could say, hey, I had this liberal that sent me this email in response to my question. He had a good point, but I didn't get one. None of them made any sense to me. I still cannot understand how the left, who, as I said before, are for the downtrodden, for the outcast, for the poor of this country, can just disregard the poor downtrodden of this country in favor of refugees. Is it ironic to you that the people that are trying to help the downtrodden and the poor, it's the party that the media has said doesn't care about them. This is the manipulation that you are dealing with on a daily basis. The Republicans are giving everything they can to help the poor, to help the downtrodden. And the first thing they're doing is not allowing an influx of refugees into this country while the Democrats get a free pass. They say, hey, we're for the poor, we're for the downtrodden, and the media just will regurgitate that and spew it to the masses, and half of the masses gobble it up without even looking at the numbers and the facts and say, yes, that's exactly what's going on. But if you look at the facts and you look at it with a rational, open mind, objective mind, it doesn't make sense. And no liberal can give me a reason why we should take these refugees in before helping our own. So, again, any liberal out there, and I know you're out there, please enlighten me. I want one. I'm asking for one liberal to enlighten me. That's all I ask. I don't think it's too much. So, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to discuss an old friend of mine that's making waves again. So sit back, relax, don your gas mask, and open your mind. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. We will be right back after this message. All right, to all my paranormal patriots. Last week, I mentioned to you that Minds.com is becoming the new Facebook alternative for all of your social media needs. Well, over the past week, I've spent a fair amount of time on this, and I can tell you from experience that Minds.com is simply amazing. If you ever tire of Grumpy Cat, selfies with dinner, or the general mundane nature of Facebook, you owe it to yourself to try Minds.com. How it works, and this is a phenomenally easy process, you sign up for Minds.com and all you have to do is find the subjects you are interested in, and you post. Now, every hour that you are on Minds.com, you receive points. These points are free, and they start to accrue. So let's say you have a post that you think is amazing and everybody needs to see this post. The problem with Facebook is the only way to have that happen is for everyone to share it to make it go viral. The odds of that are slim to none. However, on Minds.com, it's a different story. If you have a post that you think everyone needs to hear and see, all you need to do is use the points that you've accrued and boost that post. What that does is that sends your post to the top of everyone's feed for everyone to see. My latest post, after I boosted it, had over 1,200 people view it. I haven't even come close to anything like that on Facebook. If you want your voice to be heard, you need to go to Minds.com. It's that easy. Sign up, post, boost, become a star. Don't forget also, you can earn money by posting and sharing and having people share your thoughts. Take it from me, Minds.com is the next evolution in social media. And before I end this message, I want to give a special shout out to Brandon D. in Michigan for cluing me in to Minds.com. If it wasn't for Brandon, I'd still be talking about Facebook. And Facebook, as it looks right now, is archaic. It's a thing of the past. The new wave, the new future of social media is Minds.com. Alrighty, thank you to Minds.com for sponsoring this upcoming segment. Just to let you know, I don't know if they do or not. They may agree with what I'm preaching to you on the mic right now. But even if they don't, that doesn't mean you can't visit Minds.com. You have to go to that site. So I hope you visit them. Let me know what you think of it, because I'm very curious. On with the show. So it has been a while since I've talked about this, but it appears that I need to discuss this environmental disaster yet again. But before I begin, I want to give you a brief history on the subject that is, drumroll please, anybody? Fukushima! Yes, Fukushima's back in the news. It's been a while. I bet anybody that has listened to the show before it turned into the Paranormal Patriot, when it was in the infant stages of Mysteries of Michigan, remembers I had a almost unhealthy fixation with Fukushima. Now, the mainstream media is finally, after 6 years, catching up. What I want to do, for those of you who are new to the subject, I want to give you a brief history on the events of Fukushima in Japan. Unless you're a listener of the show and you're 6 years old, you remember that on March 11th of 2011, Japan experienced a 9.0 earthquake and a subsequent tsunami. The tsunami hit the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant 14 days before the reactors were set to be shut down. The earthquake triggered the shutdown of three of the six active reactors. However, the ensuing tsunami absolutely crippled the site. By 3:30 p.m. on the 11th, the emergency condenser, which is designed to cool the steam inside the pressure vessel of reactor number one, had failed. By 6 o'clock, 2.5 hours later, the falling water level in reactor number one had reached the top of the fuel, and then the core temperature started rising. By 6:50 on Saturday, March 12th, 6:50 a.m., I should say, on March 12th, fresh water is being injected into reactor one to try and cool it down. However, unbeknownst to the people injecting the water in there, the core reactor of number one had completely melted down and fell to the bottom of the reactor pressure vessel. By 2:50 in the afternoon, fresh water injected is halted, and the immediate evacuation of residents within 3 kilometers of Fukushima 2 and 10 kilometers of Fukushima 1 are underway. This began 40 minutes after the fresh water injection is halted at 3:50. By 3:36, 6 minutes after the evacuation is ordered, there was a massive explosion at reactor number 1. The rest is an environmental disaster that has been severely underreported. Well, except on this show. The resulting leakage of radiation into the Pacific Ocean has left the ecosystem in shambles. Scientists are now baffled as to why there are major fish, whale, and sea life die-offs. All they have to do is ask me. I'll tell them why. The millions of gallons of radioactive water that are pouring into the Pacific Ocean on a daily basis since 2001, that can be the only cause. So since the primitive beginnings of this show in 2013, I have been spouting off to you about the dangers that Fukushima poses. The severity of the environmental disaster has been largely unreported. It's been swept under the rug. It's been a non-issue. For those of us who waved the warning flag, myself, we were fear-mongers, we were conspiracy theorists, and we were pretty much the bottom rung of society because people would tell us, Tom, there's no way that that would cause any issues. The Pacific Ocean, that can absorb that. It'll just kind of absorb it and it's a non-issue. You can't tell me that dumping millions of gallons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean every day, this is since 2011, people, it can't affect the ecosystem. I'm sorry. There's no way it can't. However, this all seems to have changed with the recent developments occurring at the Fukushima reactor. It appears that TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, has finally admitted that the radiation levels inside the number 2 reactor, remember, we've been talking about the number 1 reactor, the number two reactor have reached record highs. Experts have described the levels in reactor number two as unimaginable. TEPCO, who has proved to be one of the most inept companies on the planet, has stated that the atmospheric levels inside the reactor number two are as high as 500 sievents per hour. Now, this greatly, and I mean greatly, exceeds the previous record of 73 sieverts per hour. Now, just to let you know, a sievert is a unit to measure the amount of radiation necessary to produce the same effect on living tissue as one gray high-density X-ray. So, in other words, when you get an X-ray, you're injected with sieverts, essentially. As it stands, 9.7 sieverts can kill a human being within an hour. How many did I just say? 570? That's what they're measuring at the number two reactor. TEPCO has sent robots in to monitor the situation. These robots, who are not living entities, they have no tissue, they only last 2 hours. It's hard to imagine how deadly 530, 570 sieverts can be. At this point, 530, 570, I don't even remember what it is. 500, we'll say. 500 sieverts can kill a human in minutes. The robots, while they have lasted, have shown dark lumps beneath reactor number two. These lumps are believed to be the dark matter of melted uranium rods. As the dismantling of the power plant continues, this dismantling is supposed to take 4 decades, radiation levels continue to rise and radioactive water continues to pour into the Pacific. If we thought reactor number one was a nightmare, at this point, reactor number two makes that a bad dream. Reactor number two is giving off radiation levels unrecorded. It's if TEPCO, who has proven, as I said, to be completely inept, has covered this whole thing up, they are now coming out and saying, this is bad. These levels are unimaginable. You, as a human being, walk around Fukushima reactor number two, you pretty much have got minutes to live, and you're going to die a horrible death. You're going to be radiated to death. To give you an idea of the severity now coming from reactor number two, try to fathom this. Only one sievert will significantly risk or increase the risk of cancer. One sievert significantly increases the chance of cancer. There's over 500 emanating from reactor number two. One dose of one sievert of radiation will cause radiation sickness, nausea, loss of hair, and cataracts. And we have over 500 emanating from reactor number two. A dose of 495 sieverts less than reactor two was emanating could kill half of those exposed within a month. 10 sieverts can prove fatal in mere weeks. After 6 years, TEPCO and its business partners have yet to identify and locate the melted fuel in the three most severely damaged reactors. In other words, they have no idea what they're doing. They have no idea how to eliminate the problem. The problem is continuing through this day, and it's getting worse. Even if they manage, and this is a big question mark, even if they manage to clean up this mess, the complete reduction of radiation will take, and are you ready for this? In order to get rid of all the radiation within that site, will take hundreds of thousands of years. Not hundreds of years. Hundreds of thousands of years. Think about that. The area in and around Fukushima has been rendered inhabitable. But yet we have no media coverage, no news. According to them, everything is fine. Meanwhile, the Pacific Ocean has been decimated. Everything flows to the east, which means the west coast of the United States, Central and South America, as well as all areas in between, are in extreme danger. I, in May, am going to Costa Rica. My work has unbelievably given me a trip to Costa Rica for a week. It's on the Pacific Ocean side of the country. And I told my wife, you are going to have to throw my dead body, and I am going to do everything in my power to keep you out of the Pacific Ocean. Because I don't know how much radiation has poured in to that area. What I can tell you is, since March 11, 2011, radiated water has been pouring into the ocean in the form of millions and millions of gallons per day. That was 6 years ago. It hasn't stopped. It hasn't slowed down. It's continued. The fishing industry in the Pacific Ocean is dying. However, more importantly than that, the sea life in that area is dying. Sharks, which were known to be cancer resistant, are now developing tumors. Starfish are literally turning to goo. Fish, shrimp, and whales are washing up on shore in huge numbers. We have gone beyond the point of no return on this. We can't fix this. TEPCO, again, has proven itself inept. No clue on how to stop this. The international community has given them no help because nobody knows how to stop this. So we're just going to continue to let millions and millions of gallons of radiated water flow into the Pacific Ocean. How do we combat that? Well, the easiest way is just don't talk about it. If we don't talk about it, it doesn't happen. It's not happening because it's not in the news. But reality proves otherwise. We have an environmental disaster that is, it's not going to get fixed. I knew back in 2013 when I would have every other show devoted to Fukushima, I knew we were in for an environmental disaster. I knew how bad it would get because nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to do anything about it. They wanted to sweep it under the rug. If it's out of sight, it's out of mind. That means it's not happening. Well, the fact is, it is happening. It's been happening, and it has now decimated the whole Pacific Ocean, and it threatens every ounce of sea life on the planet. It has been covered up to the point that there is no hope. The Pacific Ocean is dying. Anyone along the Pacific Ocean is in danger. This is now, and I don't want to sound like an EPA environmentalist, but this is now a planetary emergency. The problem is there is no cure. It has gone way, way too far. Reactor number one, it's gone. There's no saving it. But it's going to continue to leak radiated water into the Pacific Ocean. What do you do with all this water? There's not enough room on the planet to safely store the radiated water that is pouring out of that site. But now, add to that reactor number two. Reactor number two is failing. They can't stop it. Even if they could, it's still going to fail. So what do we do now? Well, first off, if you are along the west coast of this country or you are along the Pacific Ocean, I pray for you. But I also would implore anybody to really, really cut down on the amount of sea life you're eating, be it fish, be it crab, be it shrimp, whatever you eat that comes from the sea. And at this point, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where it's coming from. I would cut down on it. Because these fish, these whales, well, we don't eat whale, but these fish, these shrimp, whatever they are, they migrate. And if it's if it's in the Pacific Ocean, don't eat it. There's just no way. I would never eat anything out of the Pacific Ocean again. I'm not talking 20, 30 years from now. I am going to be dead. I'm going to be dust. Because it's going to take, as I said, hundreds of thousands of years to clean up this mess. And we can't clean it up. The only one that's going to clean it up is Mother Nature. And it's not going to be a quick process. Fukushima is a huge disaster. Shame on the press. Shame on the government of Japan for not making this more of an issue. Would it have helped? I don't know. But at least people would know what they were up against, because these people were under the premise that everything's fine, because that's what our media, that's what the Japanese media were telling them. Everything's fine. There's nothing to worry about. Well, all along, oh, there was a lot to worry about. There is a lot to worry about. You are going to see mutations in children come out at a hugely elevated rate. We've already seen the mutations in sea life. You are going to see the instances of cancer along the west coast of this country, Central and South America, skyrocket. Because on the west coast, that's their staple of diet. Seafood. Just like the east coast. If you're on the east coast or you're to the west coast, you eat seafood. The problem is the seafood in the Pacific Ocean is now radiated beyond belief. So what are we going to do about it? Nothing. We can't do anything about it. Again, we're beyond the point of no return. I wanted to let you know that, because not that I think we can do anything about it, because we can't. But I wanted to let you know, if you have anybody out west, know anybody along the coast, any of my listeners on the coast, please, 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 please stop eating seafood. Please, honestly, I would seriously consider moving off of the coast, because it's not just the radiated waters that are going to get you. It's not just the seafood. You are in the crosshairs. You might as well have dropped a nuclear bomb on California, Oregon, Washington, Mexico, Costa Rica, and anywhere along South America. You might as well have dropped a nuclear bomb, because that's the equivalent of what you're seeing now. I pray for you, but there's nothing we can do to fix this situation, because nobody knows how to fix it. So I wanted to let you know. I wanted to let you know how bad it is. And you can call me a fearmonger. You can call me a conspiracy theorist. You can look at me as the bottom rung of society. But everything I stated in 2013 has stated. It's come to fruition. I was exactly right. And I hate to be blowing and tooting my own horn that, ha ha, I was right. But I was right. There's no coming back from this. So we're going to take a quick break. And when I come back, I've got a subject that somebody sent to me. And they sent me this interview. And I'm like, I thought to myself, are my listeners ready to hear this? Because it's a little out there. But I figured, you know, only one way to find out. So when we come back, we're going to hear about time. What is time? And what are other beings' thoughts about time? So take a seat, catch your breath. You're going to need it. We will be right back. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. All righty. The upcoming segment of the show is being brought to you by the Paranormal Investigating page on Facebook at Paranormal Pages. They are dedicated to bringing you news on the latest tech, pointers for the best investigation techniques, video and photo evidence of the paranormal. If you are involved in the paranormal, you need to visit the Paranormal Investigating page on Facebook. 114,899 people have already liked the page. Why not you? So again, visit Paranormal Investigating page on Facebook and find out the latest updates, the latest trends on any investigation, or just talk about the paranormal in general. Again, the Paranormal Investigating page at Paranormal Pages on Facebook. Alrighty, we are back. Now, you're going to need to put your tinfoil hat on extra tight for this one. I had a listener send me a link and said, "Tom, I think you'll be interested in this. You need to read this." And I read it, and I'll admit it, I was intrigued. And I had to ask myself a question. Are the listeners of this show ready for what I would be discussing about a conversation with a Zeta being about time? I thought about it all week, and it wasn't until last night that I decided, you know what? There's only one way to find out. I'm just going to go with it. They like it or they hate it. We'll move on from that. So this is from Paranormal Daily News. The title of the article is "A Conversation with a Zeta About Time." And it begins, "Once in a while, an extraterrestrial Zeta being speaking through the medium, Paul Hamden, has a freewheeling discussion with somebody in the room about a certain topic. In this sitting, the circle leader wished to understand how Zeta beings function without using a rigid timeline like humans do. For the Zetas, time is a reference point, not a continuum, and the process of existence is each task is completed and then the next task is moved on to. Events following one another are expected intuitively rather than by measurements on a timeline. The circle leader, identified as human in the following transcript, wished to understand what life is like without the concept of a clock." Now, before I begin this, a Zeta being is an alien, an extraterrestrial from the Zeta Reticuli area of our galaxy. I am becoming a big proponent that time is more of a man-made construct. It's not relevant. So this is why it struck me as interesting. So I'm going to begin. The human, the interviewer, asked the Zeta this question. I want to have a discussion with you about the concept of time. As humans, we measure things by time. Things happened in the past, things are happening in this moment. You don't use the concept of time." Which the Zeta replied, "Let me explain. The human entity lives within the physical construct of the linear process of time, which means that, for you, your perception is that you exist on a line of time. But imagine as in a sphere in front of you." Now, the Zeta referred to a working plasma ball in the room. "Each one of these threads were consciousness, that rather than the consciousness being one beam of light, but was many. Then, of course, you can move into any area of consciousness because you can move the threads of consciousness. What denotes the point of origin for these threads? If you see the device, it's the central point of the device. If the being is the central point of the device, then of course all the threads would emanate from that being's consciousness. Your time, your concept of existence is based on your potential to understand that you are, at this point, living in a physical existence." The interviewer then asks, "So time really only comes with the physical?" The Zeta responded, "Of course. Consciousness does not envelop the understanding of the time principle. Time is used as a mechanism for humans and other races to determine functionality. What function will they provide now? What will they do tomorrow?" The human then asked, "So in saying that, your race is also a physical race. Yes, says the Zeta. But you don't use time? No. So how do you function? Simply, there is no requirement for time if you know that your time is limitless. Why would you watch your time if time was irrelevant to you? If you lived forever, why would you care? If you existed forever as a race, knowing that if any of you terminated, that you were to come back to the same place, you would understand that the faculties that are offered to you on this planet, the resources, would be cherished by the race. Knowing that you are being nurtured to some extent by the planet and its resources. But because there is a finite amount of time that you believe that you exist, your capacity as a race to use resources is great. The human then asked, if you don't use time, how do you reference back to something that has happened when you were younger? The Zeta then replied, let me use your mind to show you the answer. Imagine if your life existed as a dream, that all your experiences existed in a dream state, that there was no capacity for you to wake up, that you had no understanding of your physical body, much like you are when you are asleep. You move from one visualization to the other. There is no time construct within the dream state. There is the closest estimation that we can give you in regards to how we perceive our memories. The human then says, we perceive our memories like a dream state as well. The Zeta being then says, ah, but you measure the memory according to your length of years. You mistake that when you were young, this potential took place. This process took place. The human then asked, yes, do you not do that? In which the Zeta replied, no. Even though these things took place? The Zeta replied, ah, yes, because they exist. The interviewer then asked, so are you able to go back to that time? Which the Zeta replied, yes, you can go back to that time if you understand that you are not limited to the experiences in consciousness that you have had because of your physical body. So then the interviewer asks, I'm able to go back in my mind, but I know that it actually happened along a timeline at a particular point. You are saying that that doesn't happen with you, but that you would have happened at a particular point in your life? The Zeta then says, yes, but let me try to clarify what is taking place. Let me bring an example forward. We have existed in other forms. So a Zeta consciousness will exist in another human container along the linear time process. But that potential exists within the physical environment. If we wish, we could also use time as a method of measuring our existence. But when you do not have your physical body, all of your experiences will be a part of your existence away from your physical reality. The interviewer then says, yes, I understand that, as memory and experiences are held in consciousness. Your questioning may indicate that you seek to believe that you can move back through your consciousness and change your outcome, asks the Zeta. Then the human says, oh no, I was not going there. I actually don't believe that it could happen. To which the Zeta responded, the spirit people do not have the concept of time. They do not need the concept of time. Now, if you were able to separate from your body consciously, your consciousness was to disassociate itself from the physical container. It would recognize within itself. It does not have to have potential to need time. The interviewer then asks, are you talking about human astral traveling or lucid dreaming? The Zeta replied, yes. So when you need astral travel, you don't need time. Yes. When you astral travel, can you go back? Can it take you back to a different point in your life? The Zeta replied, let me use this sphere, the same sphere we used before. I believed it will be used many times. The sphere in the room, you are the central entity. The threads are your experience. You move in consciousness. not in a linear fashion, but in a spherical fashion. Understand that you do not exist on a line. The human interviewer then says, yes. And all of these lines are different experiences? Yes. And so the consciousness, which is you, the consciousness is you, has the potential to move to any of these threads anytime it wishes. So that's just the consciousness that can do that? That consciousness is all that is. The physical, which you hold great importance, is irrelevant. When the physical terminates, you will be the sphere. You already are, but you can just not see it because the physical container that you are is all around you. The human asks, even though you are yourself in a physical container? But the Zeta then says, and this is the part that really got to me. The interviewer asks, even though you yourself are in a physical container, the Zeta replied, but we are often in separation from the container. Look at it like this. The sphere they're talking about is like a plasma ball. We've all seen them. It's got beams of energy or bolts of energy. And when you touch the ball, the energy or the bolts of energy go to your hand. There are multiple lines or multiple bolts of energy coming from that sphere. What the Zeta is explaining or trying to explain at this point is each of those bolts, the different bolts, are a consciousness. When we realize and when we understand that we are not subjugated, that we are not stuck in the line, in the bolt that we have already. In other words, we're born. We have one bolt we're going through, and that's it. When we realize that we can jump from bolt to bolt is when we realize that time is irrelevant. I just had a huge, huge discussion with numerous members of my work family. We talked about the Sinbad movie Shazam. Now I asked them, do you remember seeing this movie? Everybody's like, oh yeah, it was a pretty good movie. I remember him. From what I understand, from what millions of other people understand, and from what Sinbad, the star of the movie Shazam, said, this movie never existed. It's just like the Berenstain Bears Mandela effect that Danielle and I talked about in our past interview. There are multiple dimensions, multiple levels of consciousness that we are open to. We just have to be able to reach them. We are not stuck in this reality. This reality is what we make it. When we have opened our mind up to the point that we understand completely what we are not a physical body with a spirit inside of us. We are a spiritual body, or we are a spiritual being encased with a body. It's not vice versa. We are not physical, we are spiritual. And being spiritual, we are able to do things that we can't even imagine. We are able to astral project or lucid dream. And what I mean by that is we are able to come out of our consciousness, come out of our physical body, and travel wherever we want. We are able to do that. But we have to train our consciousness and go against everything we've been taught. If you've been a listener to the show, you know that I was devastated by the death of Prince. He was my idol. He was everything I looked up to. But what I looked up most, I love his music. I mean, his music is incredible. But what I looked up to him most about was his openness and his understanding that we are more than what we're being told, and more than what we are given credit for and what we believe we are. He knew, Prince knew, time doesn't exist. Time is just a physical construct. If we remove the barriers of time, there's no telling what we can do. But the problem is our whole society, our whole life revolves around time. We have to be at work at a certain time. We take lunch at a certain time. We get home at a certain time. Our favorite TV show's on at a certain time. But when we remove our consciousness from that, we realize that time is nothing. We can go back to certain points of when we were younger. We can go back to certain points of when we were doing something in the past. But the difference is, it's not time we're going to. It's our memories. Even though we are spiritual, we still retain our memories. So we're not going back in time. We are accessing previous memories. And I think that's what this whole interview was all about, is we are too involved with time. If we would just step back and realize we are spiritual beings. This physical body that you are looking at now, look in the mirror. That physical body, that's not you. Hidden behind all that flesh, all that muscle, all that blood, all those organs is a soul. That soul is who you are. Let that soul go. Let that soul be free. I'm not telling you to kill yourself. What I'm telling you is the soul is able to do wonderful things if we let it. If we let it. If we understand. I've mentioned before I've been trying to astral project, and I think I've done it. I don't know if it was a dream. It sure felt real. But it felt like something I'd never felt before. It can be done. Just realize, and again, this is probably over half of my audience's head. Half of you have already tuned out. But I wanted to get this out because this is right along the lines of my thinking. We are spiritual. We are not bound by time. There's no such thing as time. We have invented time to create order. Without time in our society right now, it would be chaos. But it's when you remove yourself from that, that you realize that time is irrelevant, because our souls, our spirit, don't revolve around it. So just think about it. Do a little research on it. It makes sense, and I'm telling you, once you realize it, it relieves a ton of stress, and it just makes you completely relaxed. When you realize that time is irrelevant, we are eternal, we are spiritual, and we can do anything we want if we just let our spirits go. So that'll be the show for today. That's how I'll end it. Again, I want you to go to minds.com. Thank you, Brandon, for just telling me all about it. It's great. I love minds.com. Go to it. And let me know what you think of the show. I'm curious. You know, let me know what you think about Fukushima, because that nothing we can do about it. But let me know what you think about the last segment of the show. I'm very curious to hear what you think about that, what you think of, am I off base? Is time actually there, or is there another dimension? I mean, are these bolts of energy that I'm talking about in this plasma ball, this consciousness, are these different levels or different areas of energy? Are these different dimensions? Are these different universes? Are there more than one of us? And every single universe has one of us in there. Are we able to access it? Is that the whole premise of the Mandela effect? Let me know. Alrighty, guys, thanks for listening. I hope my plan is to be back next week, so I will talk to you later. Again, thanks for listening. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot, and we will talk to you next week.